Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, welcome everyone. Thanks to for coming to today's show. We have a wonderful lineup today. It's very interesting. Just like we usually do, we have a mix of advisors, authors, and thought leaders that are going to share their best tips, ideas, and precautions for you so that you can be well planned. And my first guest is Eileen Stevens, and she's joining us from Culture Index in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Eileen's going to talk about assembling the right team to take over and grow your business. So, Eileen, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, Eileen. Tell us a little bit about you and what you do at Culture Index.
Essentially, what we do is I work with business owners, CEOs, presidents, looking at who they have in their organization and are the people in the right seats on the bus. Most of my business owners, when they first start with me, they'll have some people that are performing really well in their organization and some people that are struggling, and we look to get the people in the right seats on the bus.
Okay, so you're using Jim Collins' terminology there from Good to Great, of course, and that's a great book, and it's a great theory because a lot of times people have people on the bus, but they're not facing the right way and they're not in the right seats. And so how do you assess that? How do you come in and say, look, this person's way out of whack? What's the first step?
The first step is to take a survey. It takes the average person about 8 to 10 minutes, and the information within that survey is very telling. Bill, if you and your listeners have children, you know that pretty much by the time somebody's out of preschool, they're fairly hardwired on who they're going to be for life. Certainly by the time they're a teenager, we're not going to change that. So when they show up to an organization, they are who they are. What we look at is how does this person think so that we put them in the right role. In the sales arena, is this somebody that can ask for the order, or is this somebody that's just very good at being persuasive but cannot ask for the order? Is this a hunter or a farmer? Or when somebody goes to exit their business, can your children run the business? Do they have really what it takes? The person that's maybe your number two that you're thinking about selling the business to, is this somebody that can actually grow the business, or is this somebody that's going to be more of a maintaining what you have grown?
Okay, I have a delicate question for you, and that is, what happens when you find out that the child or the key person isn't the right person? How does the owner receive that? Because I've been in a number of situations where they say, well, we're going to try it anyway, and it doesn't work.
Well, exactly. It doesn't work. It depends on what you really want out of that situation. We've got several clients who have successfully transitioned their businesses to other people, but just like we all have our own set of strengths and weaknesses, we want to hire to that. And it doesn't mean that the children or that number two in command can't have a role in the company, but they might not be the person actually running the company. Sometimes you bring an outside person in who manages the business, and the children still work in it. They're just not actually running it.
Okay, but that, of course, can create some, I've been around the block a few times, I'm sure you have, where I've been in situations where the son doesn't have the respect of the workers, the managers, mm-hmm. but the owner says, but this is my son and this is what I want. So I would imagine it's best to learn this information as early as possible before you make any promises or move down the road too far on your planning. Is this a good way to hire someone right out? Is that the best time to figure out what seat on the bus they fit into when they're being hired?
Absolutely, because we're not going to change who they are. We can always fill in a knowledge gap for somebody. We can always teach them what it is that we do, but we're never going to change who they are. So we want to start right at the hiring process, getting that right person and then onboarding them, managing and motivating them in a way that it makes sense. Because it really is a war on talent right now.
Mm-hmm.
For the next 15 years, this market is going to just get tighter and tighter. And so we really need to keep our top employees, and we have to understand who they are and what they're looking for. And it's not always just an increase in pay. We also don't want to promote people into a situation where they're just not going to be successful. They might be successful, very successful at a certain job, and then we give them a promotion and ask them to manage and motivate others, and that doesn't always work. We want to know that before we make that expensive mistake.
You said something in that phrase there, war on talent for the next 15 years. Could you briefly explain to our listeners why that is so?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, our baby boomers are starting to retire. So we have going to have less people in the marketplace at the same time that the economy is going to continue to increase. And in the U.S., we're even bringing things like manufacturing jobs back. And so we really have a situation where we have more work than we actually have the right talent for. So we need to get very creative in getting in and finding those right people early on. And then we have to keep those top people. I have a client who lost an engineer, a seasoned engineer, hired somebody younger, less experienced, and cost him $10,000 a year more. We want to avoid that mistake. And by the way, that was before they became a client of mine.
Okay, of course. So we have this divergence of two things happening. The knowledge workers, the baby boomers, age 50 plus workers, are starting to think about leaving the workforce. And of course, they're very valuable. And then there's not as many workers behind them to fill in the jobs. And so the people that are remaining in the workforce become more and more valuable. That's what we're getting at here, right?
Exactly.
Well put. Okay, so how important is it? So what is your experience? How important is it to have the right leaders under the CEO? And what's an example of someone that you came into and said, you know, before they're on the wrong seats and they're facing the wrong way, and after you got them aligned, what were some of the results that you saw?
Okay, well, I've got several clients, but one in particular comes to mind with that question, Bill, and this is somebody that took over a business. This is somebody that's a natural-born leader, and he took over a business and had to replace about 25% of his workforce. His sales have since doubled. His profits have gone up, and he's looking to double again. And
great.
That was simply by placing out some of the people.
So a lot of pain there to get there, but that's what it takes sometimes in these situations, is you have to deal with realities, look at the analysis. Now, do some people say, yeah, I know these tests, I know how they work, but they're not always right, I'm going to go with what I've got. Is the gut feeling a bad indicator when you're hiring somebody or when you're keeping somebody around? Is it better to look at the science of what's been developed and understand that it's a good replacement for that gut feeling?
It is a good replacement, because left to our own devices, we tend to hire people like ourselves because we identify with them. So if we're asking them to do the same kind of thing that we're good at, it's not a problem. It's when we're asking them to do something different. And honestly, Bill, people who are naturally persuasive just interview better and are better at convincing people for what they want. It doesn't mean they can actually do the job better. So we have to do something to keep ourselves from making stupid human decisions, because every time we get that wrong, it's much more expensive than people actually realize. It's anywhere between 3 and 9 times that person's salary. I just worked with a brand new client a couple months ago, and one of their facilities, we figured the capacity-wise to where they are, to where they should be. We netted that out top line. That was $1 million mistake on the two people they had running the organization.
Hmm. Wow. I bet people, you know, people probably don't really think in terms of that, but it's a huge endeavor to find, train, you know, everything that goes into a new employee coming in. And especially, like you said, these days with the war on talent. Now, have you ever heard the sailboat analogy for companies in hiring?
No, I don't think so.
Well, the sailboat analogy is pretty simple, and it's just another way to visualize it for a business owner. When you're hiring for positions in a company, think of a sailboat. You need one sail, you need one keel, you need one rudder. You don't need five sails and no rudder and no keel on a sailboat.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the right parts in the right place, and that's just a simple analogy. But how do you get the best payout for your company? How does a business owner do that?
Two things. One, you want to start, about 5 years out, and you want to make sure that you've got the right people in sales and the right people then in operations, because you want to have that highest dollar value when you decide to sell. Then you also want to know who is buying your company, because if you built this company, it is your baby. You want it to go on and prosper. So we don't want to just sell to anybody. We want to know that we're selling to somebody that can grow it. The other thing is, if we are selling to somebody and we're going to do a several stage payout of that business, it's really essential we make sure we've got somebody in that organization that can continue to grow the business rather than somebody that's going to go in and maintain or potentially shrink the business, because you're going to start losing some of that money that you deserve for doing what it takes to be an entrepreneur and grow a business.
Yeah, and a lot of times your payout, it might be at risk in some kind of an earnout where 3 years down the road, you know, if your business hasn't grown or at least survived because your key employees left after the sale, you're in big trouble, aren't you?
Yes, you are. And I've seen that happen a lot. I've had one company went from $21 million in sales 1 year to $7 million when they brought in the wrong general manager.
Wow, that's awful. That's just, can you imagine? I mean, here you are ready to sail off into the sunset, and all of a sudden you realize that you're not going to be able to do that. You might even have to buy back your business, or it's just an awful situation. It happens to a lot of business owners, so we want to prevent that. Now, how important is it to talk to employees and work on some kind of a motivation or retention program as you think, maybe I'm 5 years from selling my business? How important is it to lock those people in at that time?
It's critical. If you don't get those key people to buy in and understand what you're doing and the why, and that there's in it something in it for them, or it's a safe environment, they're going to be okay, whatever that particular person needs, if we don't address those needs, particularly your high-impact players are going to leave. And those are the ones you essentially want to keep.
Well, and those are the ones that you're telling your story about. I've interviewed a lot of M&A people, a lot of mergers and acquisition professionals, and they say the most important weighting in any sale is the discussion about your people, who are your leaders, your managers. And if your managers are all this, here's a tip for you business owners. If your managers are all within a couple years of your age and they've been with you for a long time, they're probably thinking about retiring at the same time you leave, and that's not a good scenario for getting most value, wouldn't you say, Eileen?
Yes. You know, we always need to be building our bench. From people retiring, needing to move, getting ill, whatever the situation is, if we don't have bench strength, we're leaving ourselves very vulnerable as an organization.
Good point. So, let's talk a little bit about a family business and children as successor owners or managers of the business, because a lot of businesses are family businesses, especially the smaller businesses are family businesses, and they're saying, we're not ever going to sell to an outsider, but we need to continue, the owner, let's say the mom and dad, the owners, are depending on that business to provide retirement cash flow because turning it over to their kids. So can children run a business? What are some things that can go to make things go right, and what are some things that can go wrong?
All right, so it really depends on who that child is. Sometimes it can work, but as you and I both know, when we look at second and third generation organizations, a lot of them don't survive. So we have to look and see who that child is and see if they are the right person to run the business. And if they're not, they can still be in the business. They just may not be running the business. And while that is a hard thing to swallow as a parent, I've got three kids, I understand. one of them can run a business, my other two probably can't. So I understand that that emotional dichotomy there. The other flip side of that is when we put somebody in a situation, in a role in an organization that they're really not wired to be in, we cause a lot of undue stress on that individual and the people around them. So we're really not doing our kids a favor or an employee a favor when we put them in a role they're really not wired to do.
And everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses. We know that. So it's not that you're saying this child doesn't deserve to be in the business. It's just that you're saying that they're not qualified. They may not have the experience and what it takes to run a business. And so if you have, let's say you have one child in the business that's been adept at running the business and another one that's just a good employee, what are some of the ways that you can approach that?
You know, it's as a parent or a business owner, when you're looking at passing on to your children, it's essential that we set very clear expectations and we set the equality of what they're going to get in the estate correctly. So let's say we've got a child who actually can run a business, who's an entrepreneur mindset. They may get the business, and the other children maybe get assets.
Okay. So you look at what's called estate equalization, or if you work with a good estate planning attorney, they can talk to you about different ways to get everybody what they need, but you might still have problems with attitudes with regards to that. So you have to coach that very carefully and approach that very carefully when you have do you advocate family meetings and things like that to talk about these issues early on?
Yes, the earlier the better. And one of the things that we want to address with our children, our number two employee, whoever it is that we are thinking about, you know, that has an expectation that they should run the business, when we know that that's not going to be a good fit for them, as we talk about what that job really entails in the nitty-gritty and all those expectations and all those things that they're going to have to do that are going to be a significant challenge for them, most of the time they'll decide for themselves, you're right, this isn't a good fit for me, I'd rather be over here. You know, most people, when they go to work or in an organization, they want to do a good job. They really do. It's sometimes we that put them in the wrong roles and cause undue stress on themselves and those around them.
And if a parent or a parent group is trying to talk to these employees without some kind of an evaluation like what you offer, it can get very emotional, I would imagine. So it would be very much to the benefit of everyone to have an assessment done to show the strengths and weaknesses so that everybody could say, oh, yeah, that's me, and now I see. And they can say, look, we're making this based on the facts, based on the assessment, based on your strengths and weaknesses, not because we don't like you, not because you did poor,
yeah,
you were
exactly.
Bad in school. Right, and that's really important to shift that family dynamic from emotions to facts in a business environment. Because what's at stake, and we say this a lot here at Exit Coach Radio, is you want to have happy Thanksgivings forever, and you're only going to do that if you can get the emotions out of the equation and say we made the decision based on facts. Let me ask you a question, Eileen. How often does someone take an assessment test, look at it, read the results, and say, wow, that's me perfectly?
99.9% of the time.
I was going to say, I've taken those myself, and it's uncanny with relatively little information and data and questions at how right on they can be. So it's very important.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, the science behind it is rock solid. It's very, very thorough. So when you take an assessment and you then start to use this information, first of all, you want to make sure you've got the best assessment on the market that you're using, because you are going to be using that information. But like you said, Bill, it takes the emotion out and puts it into data and statistics, and it helps everybody understand their strengths and weaknesses and how they can better communicate with others.
It's fantastic information. It's been great talking with you today, Eileen. And you're offering our listeners a no-obligation demo to assess the strengths and weaknesses of their leadership team. How would they get in touch with you to ask for that?
Two ways. Either the my phone, 704-746-9301. Or you can shoot me a quick email, and it's E. Stephens, so E-S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S, index.com. And what would I always recommend for people is, let's take a look at your organization, survey your leadership team. In addition, survey some people who are your rock stars in the organization, survey some that are struggling with the work that we're giving them, and don't tell me who's who.
Okay, Eileen, thanks very much. Eileen Stephens of Culture Index, and again, it's E. Stephens, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S, at C for Culture Index, Inc.com. Eileen, thanks so much for joining us. Been a great pleasure, and I hope to talk to you again soon and go deeper on this topic.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great day.
Thanks. We're going to be right back after this message, so please stay with us, and we'll have another guest in about 1 minute and a half. Does thinking about what will happen to your business if you're gone keep you awake at night? Will you get the price you need from your business to carry you through retirement? The BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals is the world's leading advisor network with the power to help business owners transition out of business on their own timeline and terms. Ask your most trusted advisor to create a BEI plan for you or visit us at exitplanning.com. That's exitplanning.com.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.